You are Locked On the NBA, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Welcome to Locked On NBA, where villains are welcome. I'm Wes Goldberg, host of Locked On Warriors, here with David Rommel, host of Locked On Heat. We've got a great show for you today, but let's start with this great Joel Embiid post on Instagram captioned, "You either die a hero or live long enough to see yourself become the villain," which is underneath a photo of Joel Embiid shushing the crowd in front of the where he's playing. And his former teammate, Jimmy Butler, responded, "I know a place where villains are welcome." David, what's your intel telling you about Embiid joining the Heat?
Well, there's a couple different things, too. Not only did Joel use that quote, it's also the exact same quote that Jimmy Butler posted back in 2018 before demanding a trade from the Minnesota Timberwolves. So there's a little bit of a perfect cyclical nature to the whole quoting here. But then Joel's response to Jimmy Butler's response was, "Damn right, my brother." So clearly there's some back and forth here going on between Joel Embiid and his former teammate. As far as my intel is concerned, I don't necessarily have anything in particular. Look, Embiid's under contract to 2023. So any kind of deal to Miami or anywhere else would require some major maneuvering on Miami's part. And as we all know, the Heat are looking at 2021 for the possibility of adding Giannis Antetokounmpo, Victor Oladipo, Bradley Beal, et cetera. I'm not sure that they're willing to sacrifice that for Joel Embiid, as good as he is, because of his injury history. I know there's a connection to Butler there, but they'd also have to give up quite a bit. So it's an interesting, you know, place for Miami, whether or not they're willing to make that kind of move for a player like Embiid, as good as he is. They might have to give up a guy like Bam Adebayo, who's an all-star in his own right. You'd probably also have to give up some of your key young players, you know, a guy like Duncan Robinson, Kendrick Nunn, Tyler Hero, who knows? I mean, Miami has some interesting parts here, but I'm not sure that what they have is enough to acquire a Joel Embiid there. But it just makes for some interesting drama in the middle of February, right as the NBA is peaking, right as they go into the All-Star break. All of a sudden, you get this really interesting tweet there. And I think it says more about Joel Embiid kind of trolling his fans a little bit in Philadelphia and probably being a little sensitive to the fact that they're booing him after he was beloved by much of that fan base for the last couple of years, and they supported him. Now, all of a sudden, they're not nearly as supportive as they once were.
Yeah, and you mentioned, I mean, the interesting pieces that the Heat have. They're rolling right now, and I don't think anybody's picking them to win the NBA Finals or even necessarily come out of the East, most people. But Joel Embiid would be a really interesting fit. That Jimmy Butler-Joel Embiid partnership was really, really effective in their 1 year with in Philadelphia. But Bam Adebayo has been tremendous, and I think the idea there, if you're Miami, would be to pair Joel Embiid with Bam Adebayo, which would be an insane front court, and I don't really know how it would work as far as spacing and everything, especially if Jimmy Butler's running your offense. But right. Look, the Heat played the Warriors tonight. They had all those pieces out there other than Tyler Hero, who was injured, and they rolled to a 113-101 win at Chase Center. Andre Iguodala made his return, now, of course, member of the Miami Heat, played the Warriors for the first time since he was traded in July, and didn't do a whole lot for the Heat. I mean, granted, he's still getting into game shape, played only 17 minutes, scored just 2 points. But the Heat, they get a much-needed win having lost three straight, right?
Yeah. I mean, look, Iguodala is certainly still rounding into form there, but he has provided some pretty good perimeter defense. He did so last night when the Heat lost in Portland. And you know, he was still kind of trying to figure out his place on the team here. But the surprise, as something I talked about on my podcast tonight, was Jay Crowder for his second straight game. He's been the impactful player. This is a guy who was a throw-in to this trade with Memphis. He was supposed to be getting shipped over to the Oklahoma City Thunder in exchange for Danilo Gallinari. Instead, he's become the guy who's immediately fit into Miami's offense. He's provided 21 points against the Warriors, some really great perimeter shooting, and some good overall defense. He just seems to be a little bit rejuvenated after trying to find his place on a young rebuilding Memphis team that has exceeded expectations. Crowder is coming to Miami and been an immediately impactful player. But I like the fact that Iguodala was welcomed back by the Warriors crowd and by his former teammates as well. You know, obviously you have a much better perspective on it, but it seemed like he's still beloved by that organization there, by the fans, and clearly having won three championships there, he's a part of something significant. I'm sure at some point he'll probably round into form. He's already in pretty good shape, maybe not necessarily game shape, but he's going to form a pretty scary, terrifying, I think, perimeter defense for Miami. In combination with Adebayo, Butler, Crowder, et cetera, they have the capacity to be very switchable, to guard a number of players, to be able to limit everything on the defense.
And to guard one player in particular, which is Giannis, right? Yeah. I mean, they have more bodies, I think, than anybody now in the league to throw at Giannis. It would have been a whole other thing if they managed to get Danilo Gallinari. He was not a great defensive player, but he's a big player. So, yeah. But they have now more bodies than I think even Philadelphia has to adequately guard Giannis. And I think they made that move with that in mind. And that length, that size bothered Miami, but also like their shooting from the perimeter. Now, I don't think of Miami as like a necessarily great 3-point shooting team. Obviously, they have Duncan Robinson, but they get open shots. I mentioned they didn't have Hero tonight, which I think hurt their perimeter shooting, but they've got guys who can make shots. And I was talking with some of the Warriors players after the game, and that's why I'm calling into this podcast, because I'm still at Chase Center. But, I mentioned, what was it that, forced you guys to give up 50 points in the paint to Miami? Right. And they said, look, you've got to respect their shooters, like at the end of the day. And so I think it's Miami's spacing, Eric Spoelstra's offense, and just some of that personnel is so dangerous that you have to close out hard. And you end up giving up a lot in the paint because they don't have that big center. So I think they were more willing to give that up. But then Jimmy Butler is just walking right to the rim. Bam Adebayo is getting dunks. Derrick Jones Jr. is getting a bunch of dunks. And so you end up giving that up. Your defense crashes and starts failing to close out shooters adequately and on a timely basis. And now all these threes start going in. And then the Heat end up shooting almost 50% overall from the floor. So, the Warriors made it a tough game at one point in the third quarter, got it down to four, but it never really felt like they were going to lose that game because they were just getting everything that they wanted. And it kind of has felt that I know they had just walked into this game having lost three straight, but when they are operating at that level, and granted they were playing the worst team in the league, but when they are operating at that level, and we've seen them do that against elite teams, they look as good as anybody in the East, maybe outside of Milwaukee at their peak.
Yeah, I'd have to agree with that. And once you get Hero back, Kendrick Nunn is struggling. He's been, obviously a source of unexpected scoring. Even Kelly Olynyk, look, tonight he had a career high 11 assists, and I think that's a lot of what freed up that open painted area there, because with his perimeter passing, he's so good at finding cutters as a 7-footer, and he found Iguodala at one point, he found Goran Dragic, Butler, etc. He's a very good passer for his size, and since he's mostly perimeter based, even at his size, he frees up a lot of that offense too. And they had, I think, 36 assists on 43 made field goals. So that's pretty fluid offense. I think it was one of their best games offensively of the season. And maybe that has something to do with their opponent, but they also look pretty sharp. And as you pointed out, they've managed to do this at other points throughout the season as well.
Quickly, let's round out the rest of the scores from the night. The Charlotte Hornets beat the Detroit Pistons 87-76 in what feels like a game out of the 80s. The Brooklyn Nets beat the Pacers by 1 point, 106-105. Spencer Dinwiddie, 21 points, plus the game winner with just under 4 seconds left in the game. The Magic beat the Hawks 135-126. Nikola Vucevic, 24 points, 9 rebounds, and 9 assists. Trae Young, 29 points. Another big scoring night for Trae Young in another loss for Atlanta. The Toronto Raptors beat the Minnesota Timberwolves 137-126. It was D'Angelo Russell's debut for Minnesota. Pascal Siakam went at him all night for pick and roll after pick and roll and scored 34 points for Toronto. The Bucks beat the Kings 123-111 in a result that shocks nobody. The Utah Jazz beat the Dallas Mavericks 123-119. Rudy Gobert, 17 points, 16 rebounds. Denver Nuggets beat the Spurs 127-120. And the Lakers defeat the Suns 125-100. Anthony Davis goes for 25 and 10. After considering a midseason return to the NBA with the Lakers or the Clippers, veteran guard Darren Collison has decided to remain retired, according to ESPN. Now the Lakers are apparently interested in Dion Waiters. David, is Dion Waiters enough to save the Lakers backcourt, to save the Lakers depth, get them the ball handler that they've so desperately decided they needed?
I obviously, we're pretty close to the situation there, having covered Deion in Miami, and this one's been a tumultuous year for him. I think it's so complicated when you look at Deion's season. Like, I mean, his whole career really has been complicated, but I think the narrative now is that he's this inherently overly confident guy, that he may even be now bordering on locker room cancer status. He wasn't a problem in the locker room. Everybody in that locker room admired Deion, liked him personally, joked with him. He was not able to crack the lineup because of some issues with the coaching staff, not necessarily with fellow players there. But as far as his playing ability is concerned, I still think he can make a positive impact. In his one strong game with the Heat, he played against the Los Angeles Clippers on a Friday night game on ESPN. This was the first time he had played all season, and he wound up hitting some clutch shots down the stretch there to cut a Clippers lead to three within the waning moments of the game. I think he could benefit the Lakers. I'm not sure if the demands and the expectations of the Lakers are ideal for a guy like Deion, because he has to find a team where he can make an impact and continue to kind of just round into form there. He has been on the shelf for most of the year, so I'm not sure that he can go immediately and make a huge impact right away for the Lakers, and that's the expectation, right? Which is weird, because right. Then why would you go after a guy like Collison, who's been, you know, on the shelf for most of the year too? With Iguodala, it takes some time in order to get back into form.
And that's because this is kind of what the Lakers are going to be doing for the next several years, when LeBron and Anthony Davis are taking up most of their cap, and they've kind of forced their situation, like their cap situation as it is, they just don't have the wiggle room. I mean, yeah, they'll have a mid-level exception every summer to use, but this is kind of the bargain bin shopping that they are going to have to do, especially mid-season. I mean, we saw they wanted to make trades before the deadline. They just did not have the salaries to stack up. The Clippers, meanwhile, were able to move Mo Harkless and get a piece in Marcus Morris that they liked, but the Lakers didn't have anything like that, so they were banking on Darren Collison. They were wooing Darren Collison, of all people, sitting him next to Jeannie Buss at Staples Center and showing him a good time, like he's some sort of all-star, like this is like a trip to the Hamptons or something. Mm-hmm. But this is sort of where they're at, and it kind of reinforces the idea that the Lakers, as good as that they can be, their margin for error on the margins is so slim that they have to get all these moves right. When they sign a guy to a minimum, when they go find like an Alex Caruso type, like they have to nail those moves. They have to nail the Dwight Howard signings, the JaVale McGee signings, because if they don't, it could really hurt them. And I don't know that Deion Waiters is the answer to that, but if it's not Deion Waiters now, and it's not Darren Collison before, it's just going to be some other retread guard and contributor later on. This is just going to be sort of where they're at as far as supplementing their two all-star players.
Yeah, Tyler Johnson's a name that I was curious about too.
Oh, interesting.
I think, yeah, he's a guy who's, I think, a little bit more ready for that situation. Somebody who can fit alongside a bigger, you know, personality like LeBron James and understand his role. He's not going to try to do too much, which is something that Deion's always been a problem, you know, had a problem accepting. You know, I think Deion raises their ceiling, but he also lowers their floor. I think Tyler Johnson's probably a little bit more, he could probably fit into the role expected of him a little bit more easily. So I'd like to see that fit in there.
That's a really good idea. I like that one. Speaking of LeBron James, he could make his return to the Olympics. He sat out the 2016 campaign, but is one of the finalists, along with Kevin Durant, Klay Thompson, Jimmy Butler, Kyrie Irving, Draymond Green, his teammate Anthony Davis, James Harden, and now Steph Curry has thrown his name in the mix, and he's never participated in the Olympics. So a lot of superstar players involved, and it's rare that we have all these superstar players involved in a potential Olympics game. What would be your ideal starting five, David?
You know, I think it starts with LeBron James. I think he could kind of fill the role of the veteran presence there, kind of what Carmelo Anthony has been like in the past. You know, it's going to be weird not having Anthony there, but I think they'll adjust somehow. But James obviously is a guy who makes a lot of sense, because his passing, his size, that's not something other teams can prepare for around the world. And then Steph, to be honest with you, I think he makes perfect sense. His shooting is so dynamic, and you know, I don't think anybody, and obviously nobody in the NBA can prepare for it. Nobody in international basketball can prepare for it. I'd like to see what Kevin Durant can do if he's healthy alongside LeBron James. That would be an interesting pairing there. Anthony Davis would add some great size there. And then finally, I think Harden, that would be my starting five there. So Steph, Harden, Kevin Durant, LeBron James and Anthony Davis.
Yeah, you're one of the few people actually begging for more James Harden basketball, I think, in the NBA. But I'm going to swap out Harden. I like your starting five, but I'm going to swap out Harden for Klay Thompson because,
sure.
I mean, for the same reason you mentioned Kevin Durant, this will be the first time we see Kevin Durant if he really does participate, right. Coming off that Achilles tear. Likewise for Klay Thompson, who's coming off that ACL tear from the NBA Finals. So it would be nice to see those two. You obviously have the added drama wrinkle of Steph, Klay, and Kevin Durant all playing together again, which would be kind of interesting if Kevin Durant left the Warriors and his first game of like competitive basketball was with the two guys he left and not with the guy he left for in Kyrie Irving. Right. That is what I am rooting for because that is just tremendous drama and I love it. And then throw LeBron and Anthony Davis in the mix and now you basically got the old Warriors, Kevin Durant versus all of his new rivals. And these new Lakers teams, I mean, it's just like you've just got so much, you know, interpersonal dynamics that are just really, really interesting. I'm going all in for that.
Yeah, that's what the Olympics is all about, as much on-court drama as possible.
coming up, we've got some big games tonight. We'll tell you what to watch. The Clippers and Sixers play on TNT in Philadelphia, which means the 76ers actually have a chance to win the game, followed by the Celtics and the Rockets. And then Damian Lillard's Trailblazers also play Zion Williamson's Pelicans tonight. David, which one of these are you watching?
You know, I'm tempted to go with the more drama route, obviously, to see whether or not Joel Embiid gets booed twice as loudly now as he did the last time. But honestly, I mean, Dame Lillard, even still, feels like he's one of the least talked about stories in the league. And having just seen him kind of demolish Miami with some 35-foot three-point bombs from out of nowhere, he might be the most exciting player in the league. I mean, you know, now that Steph isn't playing, isn't that a likely possibility? Like, there just seems a point there where you can't stop Damian Lillard. And if he's got that shot falling, you know, he's been averaging, 40-something points over the last six or seven games. He just doesn't seem like he's getting a lot of, you know, publicity, and nobody's really talking about his impact, but he is just absolutely fun to watch. He's kind of single-handedly carried that Blazers team, maybe getting some contributions from that guy, Hassan Whiteside. Either way, Lillard is so much fun to watch, and kind of seeing the excitement of Lillard along with Zion Williamson, that's the game that I'm most interested in, but mostly for Lillard and secondarily for Zion.
No, that's a great take. Dame might be the most exciting player in the NBA. I mean, who else? Giannis has got to be up there.
Is he exciting, though? It kind of seems like he's just like a 6'11" Harden and that he gets to the lane. I mean, obviously he shoots. His shooting has improved. But he draws so much fouls. It's not necessarily the same thing. With Lillard, when he gets that pick and roll going and he gets – or even when he's just one-on-one and he just decides to rise up from 30 feet – like, that's exciting to me anyway. Yeah. Maybe I'm wrong, but No.
I think – and you mentioned Steph before. I mean, these are the two guys in the league who can snowball a team the way that they do, where you just – you like, 1-3 leads to another, and they just seem to be further and further out every time, and these guys just keep scorching hot, and you can't do anything to stop them. And that is exciting. That's a new kind of exciting, where the Giannis exciting is a very old-school sort of Michael Jordan exciting, where he's just going to get to a spot, and he's going to do something that you probably haven't seen before, but it's a highlight where – Damian Lillard, it kind of feels like an experience a little bit just to sort of witness it when he's playing the way he's playing right now. I don't disagree with you. I'm going to definitely watch that game. I'm also watching Celtics Rockets because I'm sorry. This new Rockets thing with all these 6'5 guys, the way that they play, I haven't gotten enough of it yet. I haven't watched every single Rockets game since they traded Clint Capela, but I want to watch more. And then playing the Celtics were equally long and interesting. That to me is going to be a whole lot of like kind of modern NBA basketball where everybody's switching around, everybody's versatile. It's going to be a high scoring game, I would bet. So to me, I feel like that one has some fireworks ready to go. But man, that Trailblazers Sixers game. I mean, you mentioned the Joel Embiid drama, the Damian Lillard hot streak. Some good basketball on tonight. So Clippers Sixers, what's the other one? Celtics Rockets, Clippers Sixers, Trailblazers, Pelicans, all really good options on this Tuesday night. Remember to listen to and subscribe to Locked On NBA on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Podcasts. If you're on iTunes, rate us, review us, say nice things about us. For David Ramil, I'm Wes Goldberg. Thanks for listening.